Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Monday, December 11th, 2023. We are fast closing in on the end of 23, and it's been quite a year from an economic perspective. I think we'll do a little bit of look back as we get into the week between Christmas and New Year's. But for certain, the economy in 2023 has been something to watch. Anyway, thank you for tuning in today, and thank you so much for watching WVW-TV. We really appreciate your viewership, and we really appreciate your continued support as well. As you know, WVW-TV has been on the air since 2006, and it's bringing you very important and timely information that you're simply not going to see in the mainstream media. We believe in the great marketplace of ideas, which is what is the foundation of a free society. And we bring to that marketplace very good ideas and very clear thinking. And that all happens as a result of the hard work done by the staff at WVW-TV. So we like to thank them for their continued efforts in keeping us online, but also the viewers like you and people who tend to support the WVW-TV through the WVW-TV Foundation. If you're thinking about making gifts and you're in a generous mood during the holidays, or anytime during the year, please reach out to the WVW-TV Foundation and offer your support. You're not only making a charitable donation, but you're also continuing to allow us to bring forth ideas into that great marketplace of ideas. And that's really what a free society is all about. So when you make a donation to WVW-TV, you are very, very much helping keeping freedom alive in this country by bringing all sorts of excellent viewpoints into the discussion. As you know, we're not a commercial network. We don't sell ads, so you're not going to be interrupted in our programming. We do have sponsors, and perhaps one of those sponsors is you. But we also have corporate sponsors that help basically pay into the program to keep us online. And the sponsor for my program this year has been Swiss America Trading, which, as I like to say, is a fine purveyor of precious metals. But Swiss America Trading is an American company. They're based in Arizona, and they basically sell tangible precious metals. So if you are thinking about maybe buying some tangible precious metals, and what does that mean? Tangible means that you can hold it in your hand. You can hold versus paper precious metals, which you can buy in the markets, and you take a position, and then you hope the gold is there. But when you have tangible precious metals,
first I want to get to one of our partners here.
And here they are on the screen right now. The way to do tangible precious metals is, of course, for regular people to buy bullion coins that are minted by governments. And the coins that just flashed across the screen are coins minted by the U.S. Mint. And when you buy that type of tangible metal as an investment or an asset to hold, you know that the size and the quantity and the quality of the gold or silver or platinum is regulated because they're manufactured by the U.S. Mint. And as a result of that, you can buy with confidence. And then, of course, the question becomes price. And right now, Swiss America is offering a great special. They have $13.50 each for the standing Liberty half dollar. That was that silver coin in the middle. And when you are interested in buying bullion coins like that, of course, they're shipped to you. The whole idea is that you hold them in your own possession, so they're not sitting in a vault somewhere. You have them hidden away in the sock drawer or wherever. But the point is, right now they're running a great special, $13.50 each, plus shipping, or including shipping, which is a big deal because precious metals tend to have some heft to them. That's why they're precious. And you can get $13.50 for these standing Liberty halves shipped right to your house or business or office for free. Shipping's included. So if you're still rummaging around trying to figure out what to buy, you're difficult to buy for friends and relatives during this holiday gift-giving season, please consider giving the gift of precious metals. I mean, it's something that somebody will be happy to receive, and they certainly will not use it up, throw it in the garbage, and it won't end up in a landfill. precious metals last a long time. So while it's something that's certainly a gift idea, and at $13.50 each, well, you can really go shopping. But keep in mind, that's up to 250 coins per person, and the whole offer is expired once they run out of inventory. So if you're getting to be October or December 11th and you're looking for a gift, this would be a good day to either call them at 1-800-519-6271 or go to their website, SwissAmerica.com. Use the promo code EASTMAN, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, and you can take advantage of that offer and shop around and see if there's any other offers you'd like as well. So anyway, we'd like to thank Swiss America for their continued and very loyal sponsorship and patronage of this network, and we appreciate all they do for us. Okay, let's move on to the news. Of course, this is going to be a big week for news in the middle of the holiday season when nobody pays attention. But this is a lot of interesting news is coming out. And I want to rattle off a little bit of a list here. On Tuesday, tomorrow, the United States Department of Labor, Commerce puts out the Consumer Price Index. And of course, those are the metrics that measure inflation. And it's interesting that they're coming out Tuesday, because on Wednesday, the very next day, the Federal Open Market Committee, the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee, will be meeting to once again consider and debate that seemingly age-old debate as to whether or not they should raise interest rates to fight inflation, or they should keep interest rates steady because inflation seems to be moderating, or if they should cut interest rates in order to stimulate the economy. And that when you see the consumer price index number coming out on Tuesday, and then of course the FOMC meets on Wednesday, the timing is relevant, because if the big consumer price index number comes out tomorrow and it's really high and inflation is raging along, the Federal Open Market Committee, they don't start analyzing tomorrow night. Okay, they've been thinking about this for like a month or two, but it gives them political cover to do what they're going to do. So if we will see higher consumer inflation tomorrow, then we can probably think that the Federal Reserve will either hold the interest rates where they are or maybe bump them up a little bit. But if we see the consumer price index numbers are coming down, that inflation is moderating, then perhaps the Federal Reserve will keep the interest rates constant, or they might lower them. And if they lower them, of course, they will stimulate the housing market, which has really been slammed this year because of the high mortgage rates. Now, earlier this year, we were talking about mortgage rates of 8%, which are really burdensome. Now, historically, that isn't so bad, but in the last 20, 25 years, 8% is a market killer. It's a real game changer. So we noticed today that, you know, interest rates have been trending down, and you're starting to see rates at 7.1%, 7.2% instead of 8%. But make no mistake, a 7% rate is a lot higher than a 2.5% rate, and that's what the housing market has been struggling with. So we've learned in past lectures that the home builders are basically trying to move inventory, and what they're doing is buying down rates. So if you're one of the lucky few that can find a brand new home with a builder that wants to move inventory, they will buy down your rate for you, so you'll be able to buy in at, say, 5% or whatever their number is. And that's kind of where the action is in housing. It's a very small little bit of action. As we know, most of the housing markets across the U.S. are very, very flat right now. The people who have houses aren't eager to sell them and then with a 2% mortgage and go out take out an 8% mortgage. And, of course, the people who are eager to buy a home are looking at a very limited supply of offerings. Supply, you know, as we know, classic Adam Smith, when supply is down and demand is constant, ceteris paribus, then the prices go up. So there's a lot less in the market, and the stuff that's out there is probably not desirable to a lot of people, but yet the prices are through the roof. And I think when the Fed Open Market Committee meets, the political pressure that's causing throughout American society is notable. And of course, we have to consider we're going into an election year next year, and the current administration will want to be reelected. So of course, they will be really enthusiastic about getting those interest rates cut so we can go into 2024 and the economy's picking up steam. And oh, look, you know, after 4 years, I've been able to turn the ship around, even though it was already put in the right direction 4 years ago. But, you know, apparently we made a 360 in the spin. And the other side, of course, will say, look, you know, 3 years ago, we had a great economy, and now look, it's in the toilet. So effectively what happens is there's going to be a lot of political pressure on the Federal Open Market Committee to cut rates to stimulate the economy. And we'll see what happens. Now, let's keep in mind, you know, you think about the Federal Reserve, we've talked about their structure in the past, and the whole idea of a central bank in the United States was in the beginnings of our fine republic. The idea of a central bank was anathema to the founders, because they had come from Europe and seen the power of the Bank of England and the central banks in Europe, and realized that the ability of the government to control the money supply led to no good. It led primarily to war after war after war. And the idea that in a newly founded republic, leaving the British Empire, and the worldwide net, the global net of the Bank of England as it financed the global empire, was very much in the minds of the new Americans. So the idea of having a federal national bank was really frowned upon. And of course, there were two attempts earlier to try and establish these a national bank. And Andrew Jackson, the great early Democrat president from the South, long before the Democrats ever became progressives, but absolutely adamantly opposed to a federal bank, and of course ended up shutting this down. This is way back in the early 1800s, and that's an interesting read all by itself. And there were the Federalists up in, you know, in New England and New York that were effectively trying to have a strong banking system, because they realized that in order to expand across the American continent and to develop this out as an American nation, you need a strong banking system. And of course, the small D Democrat, actually it was a large D Democrat party back in those days, from the South, were the real populist types, and really did not want to see centralization and concentration of power. I mean, they had the New York center was the money center of the United States, and far down in the South was the political center in Washington. And until very recently, that was always the separation. The politics happened in Washington and the money happened in the Northeast. Today, it's not. I mean, it's just all one big ball, big ball. But the point is, with the Federal Reserve System, the whole idea, we didn't have that until 1913, as I mentioned. And the idea with the 1913 creation, whether you think it's the monster from Jekyll Island or whatever, but the point is, this thing took on a life of its own. At the same time, we brought in federal income taxes into the United States. And really, from 1913 through today, we are living in a vastly different economic system, funding, revenues, as well as monetary finance. So we have this Federal Reserve System that was created in 1913 and survived World War I, and of course survived World War II, and became preeminent as the model for central banking throughout the globe. But the question today is, what is the effectiveness of the Federal Reserve when the markets transcend? If you go back to my big ball of the economy, the national income or the gross domestic product, all the private sector, the people and the companies all doing business with each other and money coming in and money going out, you've got this economy. And of course, the whole idea with the Federal Reserve System, in addition to their dual mandate of full employment, let's keep that thing humming along and keep inflation under control, so it doesn't just, the ball doesn't just spin out to infinity. You have this idea of backstopping the banks, and the whole idea is, as you want to make this ball grow at a reasonable rate, but grow and grow and grow. That would be good economic policy. So the Federal Reserve, historically and traditionally, it was, you know, how much money do we put into the ball to keep this thing growing, so everybody's got a job and people are making money and good times, economic good times. But at the same time, we don't put in too much money so that the ball blows apart, and that would be inflation. And we've been wrestling with this concept for quite a period of time now. This isn't just something new. I mean, there are people, I don't know if there's anybody still alive from 1913. They'd be pretty old. They'd be 100, well, maybe 100 years old. But at the end, actually, it would be 110 years old if you can do the math. And so the point is, it's, you know, over this period of time, this laboratory, what we've seen is that in the early days, the Federal Reserve was a relatively accurate tool for the manipulation of the economy, with the idea that for the public good, we would have this economy growing in a controlled method, but always growing, always upward progress. You know, where we would always be advancing. And at the end of the day, we are at a point in our history now with this massive federal debt, not only from the federal government, but frankly, I mean, there's just a lot of debt in the system. People have debt, individuals have debt, companies have debt, and there's always been debt. But the question is, how much debt is a percentage of the great big ball is too much. And I think we are now testing the limits of that. And I think academics, especially academics in economics, of course, will be studying this phenomenon. You know, hopefully there'll still be a country left to study. But the point is that we are approaching, like, you know, sort of a danger zone where the lights are starting to flash. And I was looking at some interesting work that that a number of economists have been doing. And when you look at the American experience from 1913, okay, when the Fed shows up, and then, of course, it had to go through the roaring 20s when there was so much debt in the system. And effectively, you know, if you study the crash of Wall Street, which I think is becoming a quaint anachronism at this point, it's a long time ago. But what it shows you is that when there's too much debt in the system, and you can go to the stock market and buy stocks for no money down, that's basically what was happening, this crazy high margin rates. And of course, there was too much debt, too much money, all things blew up and collapsed. Then the Federal Reserve went through World War II, and then, of course, came out with a modern economy. At that point, after the late 1940s, the Fed was able to use its techniques because it had a couple of decades of experience, including a couple of wild rides through World War I and World War II, and the crash and the Depression, trying to figure out how to make this machine work because nobody had any experience running a central bank in the United States. Well, now they figured it all out. Okay, so now from the late 1940s on, this thing becomes a scientific tool. And the question is, as this tool was used, one statistic, since 1975, the Federal Reserve has in its independent wisdom. Keep in mind, this is not a bureau of the federal government. The Federal Reserve System is supposed to be a private, independent thing that makes the money and puts the money into the system so that the ball gets bigger, but it's private sector. It's not the federal government making the ball bigger or making the ball smaller. That would be the Soviet Union central planning idea. We would have our banking industry with its own central bank, and of course, there's lots of government blessings and you know, input. But at the end of the day, this thing was supposed to be an independent tool. Well, since 1975, there have been 9 cycles where the Federal Reserve System, in its wisdom, has said the ball is growing too fast. There's inflation. This economy is growing too fast. So we have to cool it down. Of course, that's the metaphor of, you know, pulling the punch bowl away just as the party's getting started. Well, the reality is what they do is they jack up the interest rates. The Federal Open Market Committee, through these ability to impact the interbank lending rates, has traditionally, since the 1940s, had the ability to contract, expand the money supply through the debt mechanism to stimulate or slow down the economy. And 9 times they have done rate hike cycles they have done recently, where the Federal Reserve raises the rates, pulls the punch bowl back, and slows down the economy. And in all but 2 of those 9 times, they have created a recession as a result of their actions. Now, this is problematic because the idea is, of course, when you get the economy humming along and it's just humming, everybody's making a lot of money, you know, the party's raging, and here you come pulling the punch bowl back. You'd think you'd pull that punch bowl back judiciously so you could kind of calm things down, but not everybody gets mad and goes home and leaves the party and the party collapses. You have a recession. Well, what it tells us historically, and I guess this is the value of hindsight after having lived decades and watching and Fed watchers and all these people who watch, what it tells you is when the Fed goes into a rate hike cycle like this, they have a pretty good chance of causing a recession. And of course, if that's the case, you know, as the incumbent administration, less than a year away from the next presidential election, want the Federal Reserve stepping in and creating a recession right in the middle of your campaign. Now, if you're the other side, of course, this would be great. You know, boy, let's have a great big recession. Blame it all on the president. They'll vote him out and vote me in. You know, so this is the political silly season that we're entering into. But it's not so silly when you are the homeowner, or you are the person who is part of the statistic about the new unemployment claim, or you are the person whose house is being foreclosed on. I mean, that's not silly season at all. That really impacts you individually. So as we go into this next cycle in 2024, and we're watching what the Fed's doing, it's going to be very interesting to watch this on Wednesday, because I'm anticipating tomorrow, and I have no crystal ball. This is just, kind of thinking about it, I'm no soothsayer here or fortune teller, but I suspect that inflation won't look so bad, because when the federal government puts out the numbers, because if it looked bad, the Federal Reserve would theoretically, like Pavlov's dog, would react and raise the interest rates, only to bring the United States into a recession in the middle of an election year. We'll see. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe the numbers will come back and inflation is howling away, and they're going to have to do something. But the point is that when we watch these numbers, when we watch these news headlines, and that's the whole purpose of this show, is you got to start thinking past what this snapshot headline means and think about the longer term ramifications of what is going on. And frankly, we're not in a very good position. And as a result of the massive national debt, that will suggest that the Federal Reserve's toolbox isn't going to work as well or as precisely, especially in a time of rising interest rates, where the private debt markets are looking at the situation. You get Moody's, Standard and Poor's, and they're all adjusting down the credit rating of the United States government. That's not sending a really happy signal. And of course, we have nobody in Congress who has any inkling or desire to cut spending, balance a budget. And even if they did, let's say, you wake up tomorrow morning and, a miracle happens, and everybody in Congress says, hey, we got a balanced budget. But it's okay. So they pass a balanced budget, and the president signs the balanced budget. Okay, well, good. Now we're going to be prudent. Well, then you've got this $33 trillion in debt overhang, which is, when you have a debt overhang in a business or even personally, you're going to spend a lot of future dollars paying off prior expenses. So if you rack up your credit cards, having lots of global worldwide vacations, and stay in the finest hotels and travel first class airlines and emit lots of carbon into the environment, and then you get this, $300,000 in credit card debt. Well, you got to pay that back with future earnings, okay? Which means you may have had a great time in the last few years, but the next couple of years are going to be pretty lean and stark, as every nickel you get post-tax is going to go to pay off debt that has long since been consumed. You didn't borrow the money to build an asset that makes you more money like rich people do. You borrow the money to go have fun, and now you have to pay it back with future earnings. That's the same problem the federal government's going to have. I mean, when you look at how do you pay that 33, pick a number, 33 trillion, 35 trillion, we'll find out. It's asymptotic. I mean, it's taken off, okay? It's like the hockey stick, Remember the global warming hockey stick where we're chugging along, all of a sudden, boing, we're all going to fall, we're going to freeze or something? Well, that didn't happen. But what did happen is the hockey stick of federal debt. And, somebody has to pay that back. And that's why we hear some economists are saying, well, that federal debt doesn't matter because we're only borrowing it from ourselves. We take it out of one pocket and we put it in the other pocket. Well, but for that, we wish that were true, but it's not, because every last federal bond is on somebody's balance sheet as an asset. Somebody owns that bond and they want their money back. It's not, taking it out of one pants pocket and putting it in the other. It's taking it out of somebody's pants pocket, and they want that money back with interest. And if the federal government defaults on it, well, it would be a disaster. So that debt is real. I mean, if you, you know, the guy, the economists who say that should take a look in their own 401ks and look at their bond holdings and say, well, you know, it's just, you know, it's just my money. No, they want every last nickel with interest because that's their retirement. So that's an interesting, well, that's a whole different lecture on its own. So we watch what the central bank, of course, is doing tomorrow. And we'll see, or actually when they meet on Wednesday, we're going to watch the numbers. And one way to really take a look at the credibility metric is to take a look at the free debt market and how the debt market is reacting to the federal government. And as we saw earlier, the free debt markets are saying, you know, you're pegged at interest rates here, but we want here because we think this isn't high enough given the risk factors. And when you get Fitch and Moody's and everybody's downgrading, then more risk demands a higher return. And of course, that private debt market, which is a global debt market. It's not run by the media in the United States and you create all these illusions. It's reality. And when you go into the debt market and you're buying and you're selling, the market will decide the interest rates. And I think the Fed found out a couple of months ago that, you know, when they pull out their, you know, their magic ritual and, you know, raise the interest rates, the market just ignored it. So, you know, no, you're up here, you're not here. And that's another problem. So we're going to see how 2023 ends. And of course, like I said, 2024 is going to be nothing short of crazy. But when, you know, notwithstanding, we have to earn a living and pay our bills and, you know, try to survive in an economy that is more and more, you know, instead of the private sector, people about going about their private business, doing their own private, living their own private lives, we seem to be aggregating ourselves into some bizarre digital matrix where everything is, you know, seems to be not what it is. So we will watch. We will watch and see what happens. On Thursday, of course, the retail sales numbers come out, and we're all waiting with bated breath to see how the sales numbers looked in November. And of course, everybody's going to try to predict how are retail sales doing in December for the holiday gift-giving season? And of course, what the administration will want to see is that everybody's just spending and having a great old time and buying lots of presents, and it'll be just wonderful. But we'll look and we'll see. And of course, you have to also factor in these retail sales numbers that we've had a serious bout of inflation. It was 9% last year. It's running 4%-ish this year. Well, 9 plus 4 is 13. So if sales are up 12% and inflation was 13%, then the number of units sold was less than last year, of course. And that becomes a real question. You know, again, when you see these numbers, oh, retail sales are high. Well, how much of that is inflation, or how much of that is increase in units sold? And you will not see, you know, a number in the media talking about an increase in the volume of goods and services sold. You will see the dollars, you know, and of course they'll be up because we've got inflation. So that's all coming to a head on Thursday, and then Friday, of course, we're going to close the week with the Purchase Managers Index. And of course, that number comes out. And what that tells you is that when they survey the purchasing managers in the United States, these are the people who run the factories. They say, are you buying lots of raw materials? Are you buying new machines? Are you going to add labor? You know, labor, you know, land, labor, and capital. You look at those inputs and they calculate the numbers and try to decide what are the cost pressures on these inputs. And of course, that's an important metric because if the factories are slowing down, that means the economy is slowing down. So we're going to be seeing, you know, it's going to be an interesting week. If we're going to see consumer inflation tomorrow, we're going to see the FOMC do something on Wednesday, Thursday retail sales, and Friday the guys who run the people who run the factory. So we'll see. We shall see what all comes about it. Another thing, oh, I guess I'm out of time, so we'll talk about more of this. I'll be back Wednesday. I've actually got a series of meetings tomorrow. I'll be back Wednesday, and we'll see what the inflation rate is and what the Fed's going to do. So anyway, thanks for tuning in. Thank you so much for watching WVW-TV. Reach out to the WVW-TV Foundation and make a contribution because that's one way you can participate in keeping America free. Let's keep the First Amendment strong. If you're sitting on the couch wondering, what can I do? What can I do to help? Well, you can help people that are preserving the First Amendment. And that's why you should reach out to WVW-TV Foundation. Give them some help. Thanks a lot. Have a great afternoon. Bye.